Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Friend podcast. I'm your host, Big Daddy Liberty. And today I'm joined in studio by a very special guest. And I say this because really, how many times can you say you sat with a chief economist of any organization? In this case, I'm sitting with chief economist of the Institute of Race Relations, Ian Cruickshanks. Ian, hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sikli, and how good it is to be with you again.
Thank you so much, Ian. Ian, we're going to hop straight into it. We're going to talk all things economics today, and we'll obviously segue into this topic by discussing some of the things we spoke about on the show, right? On the Daily Friend show that we recorded today, today being a Friday the 19th. We looked at the slowdown of the corporate sector in South Africa. It's very concerning when business is beginning to slow down. But we cited a particular case, didn't we? The very peculiar case of Tongaat Hulett, a massive sugarcane processing and sugar producing company. It has other spin-offs also.
Sure.
But there's this massive revelation that, hey, maybe Tongaat Hulett has been cooking the books for a while, and its share price tumbled, didn't it?
It crashed, absolutely. It looks like the certain assets have been have got disputable values in the balance sheet. Balance sheets, which I must say, have been audited and approved. Now, there's another question there. But I think what we have to say is it looks as if the accounts as presented to shareholders, the real owners of the company, would be misleading them. And if that is so, that means they're going to have to be restated, there have to be questions asked about whoever approved those accounts, and management has to be brought to book. Management in South Africa is not brought to book, usually, on the misrepresentation of facts or the disputable numbers which have been published. And I think it's about time this happened. We've got to see responsibility taking place in corporate South Africa.
Absolutely. And, you know, we often forget who the real victims are when corporate anything misbehaves, right?
Yes.
The workers suffer, and really their families. You are making this point that, you know, with the share price having tumbled as it has, and obviously now, you know, everybody's sort of reassessing what happened and why it happened, yes, and blah, 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 that the real victim here is that individual who maybe saw or had this company as maybe their only source of income.
Absolutely.
And dependence on them.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's suggested that there could be 5,000 people as a start who could be laid off. That is huge. Absolutely. Because remember that these are rural workers where every one of them has probably got 4 or 5 dependents. And very often you'll find one worker is looking after the family of his late brother because he died or passed away of AIDS or something else horrific. And if that is so, there's a massive demands of responsibility for these workers, these ex-workers. And if they're now going to be transformed into new job seekers, there aren't any more jobs. We know that. And I think, you know, the real unemployment rate of over 40% is higher for the unskilled workers. And it's that many hungry mouths. Where are they going? How are they going to be fed? They're going to turn to government and say, please, food. That's our first requirement. Government will then have to increase social grants. Instead, the money will be there, but there won't be money there then for infrastructure development because it will have been taken already. This is where we are. How are we going to get a growth focus from there on?
Ian, I'm very concerned hearing this because, you know, we often forget, especially, I think we've become numb to the news as South Africans. You know, you read a headline and you hear 5,000 jobs set to be cut from one or other major company, usually in the mining sector, but anyway, we'll cross that bridge a bit later in the show. Or 1,000 jobs here, 50 jobs here. And we forget that there's people behind that headline, people who have to now rack their minds around where do I get an income? And invariably, most people look to the states, but the states are increasingly going to be finding itself under pressure, isn't it?
Absolutely. And can they soak it up from some other business venture? Well, no, I don't think so, because there aren't many who've got very much revenue to spare. Just take Eskom, for instance, very much in the limelight these days. And what do we see there? That Eskom's production, which is which is necessary for every production unit of any type, of any sector. It has been shrinking every month since May last year. 6 months in a row have been seen declining electricity. That means declining supply, declining demand as well. The economy is slowing down. And if we look at what the Reserve Bank said on Wednesday about an expected growth rate of 0.6%, I am going to remain with the view that I say, are we sure we're going to get a growth rate? There may be a problem. Mm-hmm. And if we find the economy actually literally starts slowing down, where's government revenue going to come from?
Absolutely.
It won't be there. And this is where we're going to be naive if we think we're not going to have social unrest. The North African Spring may just be an indicator of what can happen when the population gets desperate. Absolutely. They will be if they're hungry enough.
Mm. Ian, I'm going to circle back a little bit back to Tongaat Hulett because it spoke to a bigger problem, didn't it? And sorry, I'm going to spring this on you as a bit of a surprise, but it's something I just wanted to sort of have a chat about. The South African accounting industry has been under a lot of pressure recently. I mean, you've had incidents in the past where big companies have, you know, after a while realized that, hey, something's wrong or there's something nefarious happening here. And it's essentially boiling down to the cooking of books in some cases. I mean, you had the VBS heist, this perhaps being the big one. Steinhoff is also another big one. The Guptas, of course, and their various little companies across the country, sorry. there is something clearly going on within our accounting profession, I think the mother body, SAICA, needs to get at the root of it, shouldn't it?
Absolutely. They should be doing that. And perhaps we've got to a stage where the accounting body was looked at as beyond criticism. Mm-hmm. They were the final arbiters of what was morally right and actually wrong. I think what we're going to be seen now, we're seen as by outsiders as not just unreliable, we're looking at morally suspect. Mm. And if that is so, then yes, it's about time we got an official body of investigating into these sort of numbers. Do lifestyle audits. Just say, how could a middle-level accountant afford to be running an exotic motor car? Whatever. This has been happening, mm-hmm. and it's unacceptable. And what on earth do you expect your workers at the bottom level to be thinking of that? Of course, there are going to be demonstrations about the level of difference there is between pay at the top and pay at the bottom.
Absolutely. Ian, we're going to move on. And I want to put something to you. And I was thinking about it when we were recording the show earlier on. And I was thinking, you know, We speak a lot in this country about, you know, the need for reform. And I'm talking now about economic reform to get the country back into top gear, if you will. But before we get to the issue of reform, let's talk about what we have at the moment. We're not seeing much growth, as you went into early on. We're seeing incredibly high unemployment numbers. Yes. And they happen to be growing to almost record levels. High debt levels of the state. A picture, really, where nothing of substance, economically speaking, is looking good. How did we get ourselves into this mess? Because I think that's the part of the story that we've forgotten in the hubbub of everyday news stories at the moment. How did we get ourselves into this mess?
Let's look at Leadership SA.
Yeah.
Let's look right from the top, from government. They got into the habit of spending much more than they were earning. You know, it wasn't that long ago when Trevor Manuel was finance minister, and we weren't doing that. We had a balanced budget. There was cash left over in the kitty at the end of the year. That is what we should aspire to. What we're finding now is we have certain projections for revenue. We then spend that and even more. And invariably, these projections have been found to have been underestimating. So we've not been cutting our coat according to our cloth. We've been trying to make a fancy coat out of a sow's ear. And that can't be done. We've got to realize that we can only spend what we have, otherwise we'll dig an even deeper debt hole, and that will be that if government gets into that situation, they'll find that our debt to GDP ratio gets to a level where we can't afford to finance that debt, and that's looked as a debt situation which can be of such severity that lenders, potential lenders like the IMF, for instance, will say, no, if you can't run better than that in your own accounts, we'll find you too great a risk to lend fresh capital to you. That would be a real debt crisis.
And, you know, at the heart of it, because often when we talk about government debt, people forget that government debt is our debt.
Yes, absolutely.
It's money that we have to pay back at the end of the day, either through higher taxes or invariably what I believe, you know, should be the case, lower spending by the government,
yes.
More frugal spending by the government. There's something I want to put to you, and I've always wanted to sort of have this conversation with you. We in this country have a situation where there are young people today who are waking up, Ian, and they may be teenagers or
yes.
teenagers or even in their early 20s, waking up and having never seen a parent go to work,
yes.
ever. You know, never seen a parent wake up yes. to go to work, gainful employment, bring home an income, from that income build savings, and from those savings buy options. And it's beginning to affect, I think, families to an extent.
Yes.
Sorry, I want to conceptualize my thoughts here because this is actually quite an important thing. Ian, we're eroding the culture in this country of productivity at
yes.
the most fundamental level through the example I'm giving you, and also at a more meaningful level in terms of employers not finding employees who are able to meet the sort of standards of productivity that allow them to compete internationally. You've raised the issue before in our conversations around some of the things the problems we face
yes.
around labor, productivity, electricity being another issue. What are the major issues employers are facing at the moment in South Africa?
From a labor employment point of view, the lack of understanding that the employee, if the employee wants to be paid more, they've got to produce more. There's a straight line between productivity and reward. That doesn't seem to always be accepted by our labor unions.
Mm.
But what we've got to say then is, well, is that fair or not? Look at their output. If we compare the output per worker in South Africa in the motor industry, let's say that it's calculated at 2 units per day.
Mm-hmm.
In the US, it's calculated at 5 units per day output. In China, it's 6 units per day. Now tell me, where are we going to be able to create jobs, to have this virtuous circle of capital inflow, factory and fixed asset growth, and then new production, new sales, new consumer spending? It's not going to happen. That circle is turning into a vicious circle of capital outflow, of job destruction, and the problem that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
the unknowing what it is like to have a fixed salary on a regular basis.
Mm.
We've got to turn that round, and the way to do it is by government setting the example and saying we will only spend what we have.
You raised an important issue, I think, in that response, which I think is seldom looked at. Ian, there is a big problem at the moment of South Africa just struggling to attract investment. In fact, we're not attracting investment.
No.
Money is leaving. You quantified this earlier in the show. Just
yes.
quickly speak to us about that number and why it's a big problem.
The JSE is seen as a good conduit for the movement of capital. Follow the money and you'll get an idea of where it's being utilized and where the percentage production can come about and improve.
Yep.
I think what we're seeing is that if we look at foreign flows, foreign purchases and sellers of stocks and bonds on the JSE, under normal circumstances, we would have expected anything between 30 and 50 billion inflow, buyers of our assets. What have we seen this year? So far, only this year to date, and it's only just halfway through, 60 billion outflow. Capital that's been taken out because the investors have said, no, we don't see a future prosperity, we don't see future growth or reliability of income flows from these investments. Now, if this is what's flowing out, how on earth are we going to find an offset for the raging capital account, current account, and budget deficits that we have? We are in a serious debt trap where we're not going to be able to afford the interest and repayment of existing debt. Never mind get any further debt.
I think anybody who's just listening to you say that is very, very worried.
Should
because
be.
Because you're speaking to essentially the health of the economy.
Yes.
Investor sentiment gives you a very strong indication of just how healthy your economy is. If someone is pining to put money into your economy, then clearly you're doing all the right things. Well, then clearly we're not as a country. No. And I'm going to put this to you, and I want to see what you sort of say. What if I said to you, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Okay.
I'm a South African politician. I'm saying something. I've just heard Ian say this. Maybe we're speaking at a public panel. There's investors in front of us. And then I, as the politician, say, oh, no, man. Ian is just scaremongering. There's nothing wrong with the South African economy. What we have is a few challenges. This wonderful word politicians yes. love to use. What we have is a few challenges. And really, at the helm of it is two things. This greedy capitalist class, corporate South Africa, who's sitting on these reserves, these billions upon billions of reserves that they're sitting on and they're not investing in the country. And secondly, let's see, what would a politician say? And secondly, what we have is an environment where the global recession is holding South Africa back. How is this politician wrong, Ian?
First of all, those reserves, they are there for a special reason. How much are they? $40 to $50 billion, real money. And why are they there? They are there as a backstop. In case there's any unforeseen event in the economy of the country, we can cover 3 or 4 months of imports. We wouldn't have to say, heck, we've got no cash. We can't afford to keep the economy moving. That's what happened in the bad old days of 1985 to 1990. We ran out of money. So we can't afford that, so we built up our reserves as a backstop in case there's some national disaster or international catastrophe where we've got to have cash on hand. It's there and available to back the currency, to back the economy, and to back the government of South Africa. If we spent that money, once it's spent, it's gone. Then what? Then we really are floating in with a heavy weight around our feet and likely to go downhill.
Well, that same politician listens to your responses about, oh, hang on, Ian, it's not all doom and gloom.
No.
We as government have, and really we in the ANC, because de facto that's essentially a line they're blurring a lot.
Yes.
We're not too worried about the fact that, you know, we're not getting revenue from South Africans or we're not getting revenue from investors. We're now eyeing pensions, you know, which are the eighth largest in the world. In dollar terms, and you know, one of the largest, in some of the individual funds are some of the largest in the world. So we as politicians are eyeing pension funds as a way of, one, securing current expenditure of the state, which includes the growing wage bill of the state, and two, likely various state-owned enterprises which are indebted, like Eskom and SANRAL and SAA. What we're doing now, Ian, is called prescribed assets, and we're going to tell your fund manager where to put your money as a citizen in our government projects. That's a good idea, isn't it, Ian?
No, it's a terrible idea. Why are those funds in the pension fund? Because they're looked on as a hedge against inflation, because we don't want people to retire on a fixed income, which will gradually get eaten up by the continually rising cost of living. That is a fact of life we can't do without. And so what do? We put their investments in the pension fund into growth assets. So you've got an offset against these potential threats. And then they say, well, you know, they took it from us, the pension funds themselves. We made contributions to back up the employees' contributions. So we'll take it back. Hey, it doesn't work like that in the real world. It was taken there as that hedge against inflation and the rising cost of inflation of living. It's got to be left there for an ongoing period of time. Otherwise, what would happen? What's the alternative? When you get to paying the pension, there's no money in the bank. So you print money, and then you find the destruction of the value of your currency very quickly. Just look at Zimbabwe.
Absolutely.
When their currency was destroyed, so was the economy. Mm. We can't afford that.
Ian, I want us to stick on this topic, and I'm putting my Big Daddy Liberty hat back on. I'm no longer the ANC politician. I want us to stick to this topic because I think it's a serious one. South Africans are facing a serious threat right now of politicians who are becoming ever increasingly predatory in their outlook, and they're looking at our pensions with very greedy eyes at the moment, and they're saying, oh, goody, goody, look at all this money. In fact, at the end of 2016, the total value of South African retirement funds was about 4 trillion rand.
Yes.
That's nearly, I think, the entire GDP of South Africa.
The value of the entire economy is about 3 trillion.
Ah, well, there you go. So it's just above that.
Yes.
This is a pot of money that they're looking at, and the ANC in their last elective, the ANC in the last election proposed this policy that I alluded to earlier on of prescribed assets. This would give a politician the power to essentially walk up to your fund manager and say, listen, that money that you're managing on behalf of, nearly 16 million South Africans, 11 of whom are still working and contributing towards it, we want that money to be invested in Eskom or Sanral or Transnet, any of the other SOEs that I mentioned. Or alternatively, we want to use that money to build a road between Durban and Umtata, whatever. So essentially, politicians accord themselves that power to decide where this money is invested. Now, a lot of South Africans, as I said, are not aware of this. And it's up to us, I think, in the space of think tanks to be able to actually begin to hash out the dangers of this. There's two dangers here that I want you to speak to. Number one, if your pension fund is not being invested in high growth assets like equities, et cetera, et cetera, and instead it's sinking into state-owned enterprises that are running at a loss and are indebted, why is this a problem for the saver, Ian?
For the saver, he's looking forward to having an income from his pension fund, which was promised to him when he joined up with the government. When you sign on with an employer, they agree to put a certain percentage of your income into the pension fund, and you agree to putting a similar percentage in, or thereabouts. Now, if you then go and start taking away from that, you're breaking your contract. They may or may not care about it, but they certainly should. And as I said, the alternative there is becoming financing it on an ongoing basis, and we haven't got the revenue. There is no cash in the bank to spare, so it would be a very bad idea. Now, do we need those pension funds? Yes, because of inflation. We can't stop inflation. The rising cost of goods and services, the rising cost of living, it seems inevitable that that's what we live with. Even if it stays where it is now at about 4.5% per annum, having been very much higher, I've seen it as high as 25% per annum some decades ago. Well, we've got to give our pensioners, people who worked and devoted a lifetime of toil to government, we've got to give them certainty in being able to carry on, perhaps not at the same level, but carry on at least with basic requirements.
And my concern is it's not just even government now. You know, the policy would target even private pension funds.
Yes.
And Ian, we've had this conversation offline where you've raised the specter of actually this is not a new thing. You know, the apartheid government did this.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
In the bad old days, as they referred to, this was pre-1990, pension funds had to have up to 60% in government bonds of their total assets. Now, what did that mean? That meant that you got a fixed income, at least there was an income. What was the value of that income? Well, let's say the going commercial rate on these investments was 10% per annum. The government said, when we're not paying you that much, we're going to pay you 7% per annum. But you are effectively stealing from your pensioners the real value. And that should not be a possibility. It should not be allowed. But that is what the previous government did. They robbed their own pensioners, the pensioners themselves, of the future that they had contracted for. And I think we must be wary of what happened to that government. Should not be allowed to happen to any consecutive successive government, and that is the threat, I think.
And that really is the threat. May
I just make a comment?
Yeah, sure.
It's morally unsound.
Absolutely.
And it's not just the legal complications. It's the moral complications. We've got to be seen as a moral society so that fund managers around the world are going to say, they have the right rules, and they stick to them. Mm. Therefore, they are an attractive investment destination. We've got to see that the fund flows continue, but they'll only continue when those investment managers see this as an attractive investment destination.
Ian, as we look to sort of conclude our conversation, we spoke about this on the show also, where you know, we really dwelled on the issue of the investor, whether foreign or local, and how the investor is absolutely dependent on South Africa developing strong institutions and not necessarily strong political personalities. Let me tell you why I'm segueing into this. You know, the president of the country right now, at the time of this conversation, President Ramaphosa has just been found by the public protector as having flouted the constitution by, as she alleges or says in her findings, he misled parliament about a 500,000 rand in inverted campaign. Commas donation to his campaign from Bosasa. Bosasa is that same company that Angela Grisi was from, and he sang like a canary as all the illicit activities they were in. Anyway, but the point I wanted to circle to is this. Here's the president, Ian, who was sold to us as the reformist. He's the man who's going to clean it all up. He is Mr. New Dawn himself, as he was touted. And, you know, there's a wave of positive sentiment.
Yes, there was. It was huge.
Because we come off the back, of course, of 8 years, eight plus nine years, of one Jacob Zuma, who had completely eroded confidence in not only the economy, but government, et cetera, et cetera. And this is where I want you to trip in, Ian. You now have an investor sitting overseas, maybe in London somewhere, or New York, opening up their newspaper. They're waking up now. It's about, it's about, 8 o'clock in the morning in New York, and only an hour behind us in London. He's opening up his newspaper, and wham, here's this headline about the great reformist, the great Mr. New Dawn himself, being implicated in what sounds like a very dodgy thing, right? What is that investor thinking? Is his confidence in South Africa shattered? Should he invest in South Africa?
He says, hold on, I'm going to wait and see. Now, what is he going to wait and see? Remember, he also knows that he can't ask one person to reverse the wrongdoings, the mismanagement of the economy for a previous decade. So let's just hope that Mr. Ramaphosa can tackle one small point at a time. But what he's going to say is, that is not an attractive investment destination. I keep on going back on that. He's got to say, do I want to invest my fund flows where I'm uncertain of the return of capital? I'm uncertain of the return on capital. Is my revenue stream going to be maintained? I'm uncertain as to whether I will be able to sell out if I want to change my mind. And with that thought in front of him, he's going to say, I'm going to wait and see. I will do nothing in the meantime. And I assure you that financial markets hate nothing more than uncertainty. And that's what that breeds. And then we find ourselves unable to access capital. Then we have to dip into our reserves, which you suggested some politician says we should do. Well, that's not what they're there for solving short-term political crisis. They're there for far bigger events. And I think that this is the danger that these sort of factors can push us towards. We've got to give an impression of stability, of solidity, and of moral values.
Absolutely. And maybe as we look to round up, we're in this mess.
We are.
But let's try and offer the listener a ray of hope. And the ray of hope will be is this. Top three things in Ian Cruickshank's mind that need to happen as a reform agenda that if Ramaphosa is listening, I hope he is, must embark on, no questions asked.
First of all, as I said, those moral values. No more double standards. No more kickbacks. That's got to be passed and written off and not allowable again. What we've got to say is government must set an example. They must set the example of not spending more than they're earning. They've got to go back to the days when when we had a previous finance minister, Mr. Manuel, who, when ministers came to him and said, I need to do this or that development, he'd said to them, your department has no more money in the bank. You can't do it. But it's urgent. It's vital. That's too bad. There isn't any cash. Come back next year, and if we have some money, we'll consider it then. That is what it's got to be. We've got to be seen as being able or being willing to live within our means. If you or I starts running up in a personal overdraft, it doesn't take long for the bank manager to get on the phone and say, I see you've been spending a bit more than you've been earning. How will you pay it back? You don't know. Well, then I'm afraid we're going to have to close your bank account. That's the sort of threat that we need. That's the attitude that we've got to have. And until we have that, we're going to find ourselves unable to attract capital, to generate revenue, and to grow the economy. It doesn't sound too difficult. It shouldn't be if we can get government and get the president himself to back the finance minister with that sort of attitude. We did it before. We had a budget surplus. Hey, surely we can work towards a lesser budget deficit than we have now.
Absolutely. And just in closing, your top three reform agendas, top three things we should do?
First thing is, that is it. Live within our means.
Yep.
Guarantee security of capital. Guarantee that we won't take it away with moving the goalpost in regulations. We've got to turn Eskom around so that business, industrialists, and all are able to say that they can rely on a constant, reliable, cost-effective electricity supply. And as I said earlier, Labour must come to this party and say that they understand that their rewards will be based on productivity. If we can get these three factors right, we will see capital returning as we used to decades ago. Find we were had a very strong capital, foreign capital inflow into the country, and that is the way we can rebuild this economy.
Absolutely. Guys, or rather Ian, sorry, I'm so used to the panel on the show. Ian Cruickshanks, thank you so much. Ian Cruickshanks, of course, is our chief economist here at the Institute of Race Relations, and always a lovely voice to chat to. Ian, thank you so much.
Thank you. Good to have been with you.
And thank you, dear listener, for listening. You know, we really are appreciative of you guys listening in and commenting, liking and sharing our material. And we encourage you to keep doing that. Please continue to like, share and subscribe to The Daily Friend. And of course, you can read all our articles, the news, opinion and analysis on The Daily Friend website, dailyfriend.co.za. And remember to watch the show itself, The Daily Friend Show, on my YouTube channel, which is the Big Daddy Liberty YouTube channel, or of course, the Institute of Race Relations YouTube channel. And you can find that, of course, you can find all our material, The Daily Friend Show, which comes out on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays on there, or of course, on the actual Daily Friend website, dailyfriend.co.za. Guys, remember to support our work. You can do that by becoming a friend of the IRR. How do you do that, you ask? Well, SMS your name to 32823, terms and conditions to apply, and an SMS will cost you R1. Or if you don't like SMSs because you're thinking, hey, I'm under the age of 25, who still SMSs? Well, you can find us online at irr.org.za/join, and you can sign up to donate between 70 and 90 rand a month. Remember, guys, we are wholly dependent on you, and we really do appreciate the support. Once again, thank you to my guest, Ian Cruickshanks. Guys, thank you for listening. We'll catch you on the Daily Friend podcast next week, Friday.